Good evening. Earlier this evening, I was waiting for my, where is she? Where's my gracious hostess? Oh, there she is. Out in front of their house, which is right next to some river or other. I presume Sacramento? Mm-hmm. Right next to the Sacramento River. And it's a lovely evening. Not a little too hot for my taste, but still, it was a lovely evening. The breeze was blowing. And I was humming a tune from a favorite movie. And at some point I noticed I was humming the tune from my favorite movies. So I didn't stop humming. The humming stopped. And there was just the remarkable silence of things. Anyway, there are many moments in our day, actually, where that the remarkable silence of things is, I guess you could say, obvious. As we've said many times, it's not something to you don't reach for it. You don't go looking for it. It's simply there. Nor is it exactly the absence of sound. Okay. It's a silence that's kind of underneath both noise and no noise. And it is as much in us as it is anywhere else. And it's definitely not something you acquire by sitting still. You might think you don't know what I'm talking about, but I'm pretty sure you do, at least on some level. Because what I'm talking about is intimately and intrinsically human. Suzuki Roshi would like to remind us that everything we call phenomena is simply a brief flashing into existence. You could say from emptiness and returning to emptiness. And in order to appreciate that and how significant that is for our lives, it's good to have a custom of doing something in our lives that acknowledges that that is actually how things are. One thing people do is they sit still. Not in order to reach anything, just because of the way things are. And establishing such a custom makes it easier to appreciate how our lives reflect perfectly the way things are. you might say that's actually that's the easy part. It's it's not immediately apparent what the connection is between that and being a good person. Our lives are really they seem to be composed of both light and shadow. And if we neglect either feature of our existence, we get off balance. This comes to my mind because some of you probably use Facebook. It's okay, I'm not going to make fun of you. I use Facebook. But they have this sort of obnoxious thing that they do, which is they'll take some post that you made a year or more ago and then bring it back and say, you posted this last year, want to do it again? Which is like, why did they do that? And anyway, they reminded me of a post that I had made somewhere around the time of Mother Teresa's canonization by the Roman Church. And I think appropriately and necessarily, around that same time, some people were bringing up the shadow side of this ostensibly saintly woman and her efforts on behalf of the less fortunate. And for quite a while, that kind of contrasting story to the one on the surface, in which she was a great saint, that kind of contrasting story was sort of kicked under the rug. Anyway, there were some reports that things were not always quite as people assumed who were outside of the circles in which she moved and did her work. Whether or not she was a saint is, a question possibly for theologians. But the fact that people tended to project on her nothing but light meant that the shadow could not be addressed. This, although maybe, I don't know about you, I'm not in line for sainthood as far as I've heard, so that's not so much a danger for us, but as we make the effort to have our life reflect what's true and genuine, we need to remember to allow and even invite our shadow to be part of that so that it doesn't get hidden. Because even when it's hidden, it still operates. Now, maybe you're a fairly sophisticated audience and you know all this, so that's okay. But it is easy to forget. Among others, it was Dr. Jung who pointed out that ironically, the brighter the light, the deeper the shadow. And so in his analytical psychology, one of the first archetypal manifestations to be encountered is the shadow, because so many of us try to, what shadow? I'm a very good person. I don't have these horrible feelings. And if you have a practice of quiet sitting, you may be surprised or irritated to notice that not everything that manifests is, you know, all sweetness and light.
Notice that.
You notice that?
Well, I wasn't good. Pleased about that.
No, you were not pleased.
I must say.
Yes, I know. I'm sorry. But, you know, this process is necessary to bring all of ourselves to the practice. And to note that, and to acknowledge that by saying, okay, now I'm a Buddhist, and I have received precepts and so forth, this does not mean that we are suddenly little angels.
Oh, shucks.
I know. Sorry. But allowing our shadow side to be present for our practice is actually quite helpful and will prevent us from kind of being divided against ourselves. Now, I don't know what Mother Teresa thought about herself. Maybe there's a kind of a posture in certain Christian circles where people will take upon themselves the identity of the sinner. Oh, I'm a terrible sinner. And somehow that doesn't go beyond the surface. It's sort of like, yeah, everybody's a sinner, you know, rather than, oh, actually, I understand the process of sin in this very body-mind. There's even sin in Buddhism, as you may know. There's a term anyway in Sanskrit that is often translated as sin. Really, it means something more like offense, transgression, something along those lines. And to acknowledge that this being who is, not who has, who is Buddha nature, means to allow all of the phenomena of our life to pass in and out of the light of consciousness. Not just the good stuff. Because without allowing that process to happen, this stillness that I'm talking about can actually be a little artificial and can partly be the result of not hearing certain things. And that's not the stillness or the silence that I'm talking about. So as the process of acknowledging all of ourselves, you know, the whole body mind, all of its complex karma and so forth, as that process is allowed to continue and encouraged. The corresponding sense of stillness becomes more robust. As the not helpful process of repression, you know, sort of like kicking stuff under the rug, as that ceases to claim our energy, the sense of ourselves as an integral being comes to the fore. And this abiding stillness as Reverend Jim was saying earlier, becomes something that is profoundly trustworthy. And as Dogen says somewhere, it is never apart from one, right where one is. So this is quite a treasure, even though it's not exactly a thing. So I wouldn't say treasure it, because it's not a thing. But it is most definitely a treasure. So as I was contemplating or admiring the stillness, once the movie tune stopped, I was thinking of one of our Zen stories that kind of illustrates what I'm talking about. Not so much the shadow side. We have, in a manner of speaking, we have a richer and more developed vocabulary in the West about such things. And that can sometimes be very helpful. But this story was something like where to go to find this stillness. One of our Dharma cousins in our lineage was a Zen fellow named Dao Wu, who was quite a formidable teacher. And he had something of a reputation, and this other chap, who was a maker of rice cakes, a blameless life as a maker of rice cakes, heard about Dao Wu and decided he wanted to go and see him. And having met him, he said, okay, no more rice cakes for me. I'm going to follow Dao Wu. And this chap's name was Long Tan. And so Long Tan went to practice with Dao Wu, and Dao Wu said to him, "Why don't you, tell you what, you be my assistant, and I will convey to you the essential teaching." And Long Tan thought, "Great, that's exactly what I had in mind." So he became Dao Wu's assistant, and some time went by. Perhaps more than a year went by. Just daily life, you know. And finally, Long Tan says to Dao Wu, "Remember you said you were going to convey to me the essential teaching?" And Dao Wu said, "Yeah." And Long Tan said, "Well, come on." And Dao Wu looked at him in puzzlement and said, "So, when you greet me, I put my hands like this, and when I take my seat in the hall, you come and stand next to me, and when you bring me tea, I receive it from you. What were you looking for?" And poor Long Tan was nonplussed and was silent for a long time. And so Dao Wu says to him, "When you see, just see. If you start to think about it, you'll get lost." And Long Tan had a realization. And so, in the midst of ordinary daily life, the essential teaching is being conveyed over and over and over again. When we see, we should just see. The other day, having a question and answer at my temple, and somebody asked me a question, and I replied, and I could actually see that there was a moment when the person I was speaking with sort of went away to think about what I was saying. And he was too far away for me to hit, so I didn't hit him. But I realized, oh, I did that many, many, many times with my teacher. My teacher would say something, and I would go and contemplate. Instead of just seeing. Since it's very easy for us to go away and contemplate, it's very good for us to have a practice where the immediacy of our own experience draws us back again and again just to this body mind. It is possible to sit like this and then, I don't know, contemplate sutras or something, but I think most people don't find that very helpful. And as we accustom ourselves to a ceremony of stillness, again, the immediacy of our experience kind of wakes us up over and over. And eventually that immediacy will be an inarguable source of the teaching. The exact place of this stillness. So you may be humming a favorite tune at some point. The quality of the evening will go hush, hush. And you'll find yourself where you are. And you'll realize, as did Lung Tan and many others, that there was nowhere else to go. The Sacramento River just flows. Then when our shadow side manifests, we'll be okay with that. It's like, all right, yeah, there it is. We can acknowledge those manifestations and let them go. Have back the energy that we used to expend on keeping all of that stuff somewhere else. And just presenting our shiny little face to the world. Hello, I'm a saint. Tempted to start rattling my beads again, so maybe that's when I should ask for questions or comments. Yes.
You spoke of the great silence, if you will, throughout most of your talk, and I'm curious as to why you suppose it doesn't seem to be valued in the society at large, because I've noticed that my car no longer has an ashtray, yet it has an excellent stereo system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think probably because when most people think of silence, they think of it as opposed to sound or noise. And the silence I'm talking about isn't. So if the only silence that people are aware of is the silence that ensues if you turn off the radio, then there's always going to be this contrast and probably a preference for one or the other. Some people don't, you know, are very uncomfortable with silence. So there's always some music playing, or TV's on, or something. But the silence I'm talking about is, I don't know what is around what we call noise and silence. And well, there's some cultures where maybe you see some appreciation of that. For instance, in Japanese culture, many of the traditional arts seem to be kind of rooted in this stillness. Whether people nowadays appreciate that so much, I don't know. But in tea ceremony and calligraphy and even flower arranging, the activity reflects the stillness. And I don't have much of that in this culture, I don't think. It's not that I see. Reminds me, Lady Gaga is coming to AT&T Park next month, in case any of you are interested. Talk about sound. She's very talented, that lady. I'm not going to the concert, but you might want to. I saw that some of the tickets are $1,000. One ticket's like, oh, okay, great. I hope people have a good time. But again, that's sort of like sound as opposed to no sound. And the stillness I'm talking about is underneath all that, I guess. Something. Yes?
You mentioned seeing, and I don't think you were referring to a comprehension. I wonder when you say seeing in that context.
Yeah.
Just
seeing the way we see. There's that quote from the old suttas, when seeing, there's just seeing. There's just the seeing, that's all.
Not for me.
Not for you? Oh, yes, for you. You just don't appreciate it yet. Definitely for you. Yeah, well, but there's stillness underneath that and around that. Yes, do trust that. Yes?
It kind of reminds me of a story of my own experience.
Uh-huh.
I used to ride with my dad to work every day. We have family business.
Yeah.
And going up, it's a road called Sierra Colorado Boulevard. Originally, it was a little two-lane road that would go over a hill.
Mm-hmm.
And look down above the Sacramento Valley.
Mm-hmm.
There was not that road, but a few like it where there were billboards.
Uh-huh.
And as a kid, I was just kind of like happy to be going up in the truck, like feeling like a plane taking off or something, and just kind of enjoying the sensation of it. And maybe seeing a few of those billboards, like for the colors,
uh-huh,
and shapes.
Right.
But as I became older and was driving, like somewhere I lost that.
Mm-hmm.
Now I read it, and then I think of as what it's telling me to think about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's kind of like that. That's what I'm getting, is like, I'm remembering what it was like to see, and maybe just that's a really tough one with the advertisements, because they're designed to make you not see them.
Sure.
Basically, they're designed to trick you or something. So it's kind of like that for me.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of evokes that memory. So,
mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That very fresh quality of our experience is still there, even though as adults our mind and experience appears to be very much more complicated. That simplicity of our experience of our sensorium is still present. And if we trust that, we can let that be without trying to go look for it, because going to look for it means we're already kind of off in the weeds somewhere, just as Dao Wu's had to a long time. Dao Wu said, greet me in the morning, and I go like this, what did you want? And long time goes off somewhere.
What did I want?
And finally, maybe after many occasions, Dao Wu calls him back and says, just see, all right? And Long Tan says, oh, right. Right. Just see. And Long Tan became a great teacher in his own right. Apparently, when people would come to see him when he was teaching, he would hide. That was one of his favorite things to do. So somebody came to see him, came into the hall, you know, expecting to see the teacher. There was like nobody there. And this person was kind of on the ball, so he addresses the empty hall and he says, Lung Tan, by the way, means dragon pond. The place where Lung Tan taught was called Dragon Pond. So the guy goes into the hall and says, well, I came to see the Dragon Pond, and I don't see a dragon, and I don't see a pond. And Lung Tan was behind a screen, and he sort of leans out and says, okay, now you really see Dragon Pond. So there it is again.
You mentioned, you said the phrase, some silence that becomes an inarguable source, of the teaching.
Did I say that?
You said that.
Okay.
Pretty much. We
could rewind this and
yeah,
see, but
yeah,
all right.
Inarguable.
Okay. Did you want to argue?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I always feel like, how can I show people the inarguable source? And I feel always, you know, sort of always short of the mark. Of, and I don't even think it's really terribly possible to do that. That everyone has to see for themselves.
That's true, but you can show them, and you do. I don't doubt that for a minute. People come to see you, and you greet them. And, okay, maybe they don't appreciate that yet, but one day I suspect they will.
So that lingering voice that says, I'm not showing the inarguable source.
Yeah, just mosquito. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I have an observation. Because we've mentioned music quite a few times tonight, and music is a curious thing because we tend to think of it as sound,
mm-hmm.
which is true. Mm-hmm. You think about Lady Gaga, but the reality of it is that the dominant force to music are the pauses and the rests,
the silence,
and the absence of the sounds
yeah.
that make the sounds in the first place.
Right,
and it's a
It's a very wonderful thing. So when I was trained in the past, my fine teachers would teach me most of the music is in the movement between the notes.
Yeah.
And we were at Clearwater's Endo this Saturday, and they had a fabulous band, as mm-hmm. Clint told us for weeks beforehand. And
mm-hmm.
I was just amazed to watch them play their beautiful music, and mostly
mm-hmm.
it was the ease with which they moved between the notes.
Mm-hmm.
It was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Of course,
an arguable source.
In East Asian art, the dynamism between figure and emptiness is constantly expressed in the art. Favorite example, of course, in Zen is the circle. It's like there's almost nothing there. That's the same dynamic that you're talking about. Yes?
Another example just occurred to me about the music, and this is maybe also about speech. Comics, really good comics,
mm-hmm.
are funny because of their pauses.
Right.
And
the timing is critical.
And a persuasive speaker
mm-hmm.
is one who, like Martin Luther King,
yeah.
those pauses
yeah.
that suck you in.
Yeah.
So it comes in lots of
mm-hmm.
music and also in speech.
Mm-hmm. Quite so. Yeah.
We did a haiku poetry night a couple of weeks ago.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Oh.
And it occurred to me, I think, that the best haikus are the ones that are most rich are actually the ones that point out the absence of something.
Mm-hmm.
That they point to the what's present, but then they also show you what's not
yeah.
there.
Figure and ground, yeah. Yeah.
There was one something like the, I don't remember exactly, but I see the slime on the pavement, but the snail is gone.
The snail is gone. Oh, yeah.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Trauma.
And I've written a curriculum
mm-hmm.
to help them overcome it. And
mm-hmm.
one section I have is getting them to dream.
Ah.
Because
they resist dreaming.
It's all empty.
Yeah.
It's all empty. They're too afraid
yeah.
to dream. They
yeah.
think, you know, they can't imagine that they're going to live beyond 18 or
yeah.
20 or 30.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sitting there thinking about, now there is really emptiness
mm-hmm.
that. And it's really more of a question than as we're pondering about encouraging people move towards emptiness. And for this group of people, we need to move them towards fullness or
yeah.
vision. Or
mm-hmm.
And I wondered if you could comment on that or share your thoughts about the dichotomy here.
Yeah. Well... For many people, and maybe for all of us at one time or another in our lives, a certain silence that we think of as desirable can only be had at the expense of sound. A certain kind of emptiness can only be conjured by the suppression of something. And that's not the kind we're talking about. So the energy that is expended keeping the mind clear of the effects of trauma is exhausting. I mean, it's just exhausting. So I imagine that part of your curriculum is to allow people to stop investing so much energy in suppression and maybe allow in a dream something to come back that needs to come back. You know, it can't be excised, it can't be removed, it can't be hidden. You have to let it come back so that you can, so it can be integrated. And a dream is one way to do that. So the silence that comes from stifling someone is not the kind we're talking about, or stifling ourselves. And I'm sure that's very difficult work. And I appreciate that you're doing that, because many of us, myself included to some extent, needed help with that. Need someone else to help with that process and tell us, you know what, it's actually okay to let some of that come back. Actually, you may think you're fragile, but you know what, you're not. You're a survivor. So it's okay. You know, we'll create space where that's okay. And that's a tremendous gift. And for many of us, the kind of stillness I'm talking about, they'll need to do that work first. Because otherwise there'll be this confusion. You know, stillness is just when I can get everything out of my mind. Get out of there. Get out. You know, it's like that's not it at all. So does that make any sense? It is difficult.
That's where we start. So we start with meditation and breathing. And the last stage is actually dreaming.
Excellent.
And the other part that you just commented that just is helpful is that we invite people to think about what they want and then to ask for help. So they don't have to figure it all out.
Yeah.
They don't have to do it by themselves.
Right. Exactly.
They can ask for help.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, this is, I think, something that in the West we have to offer that you don't see in Asia so much. At least I haven't. So the understanding of the person that has emerged in the West has some considerable strengths, expressed largely as the insights of psychology, among other things. And you don't get that in traditional Asian cultures so much. The things that I've talked to my teachers about, you never talk to your teacher about in Asia. You don't talk about your job very much or your marriage. Maybe sometimes, but if you're a monk in training, no. You don't bring that stuff to Dokusan. So the West has quite a bit to offer in that respect, I think. Lovely to see you folks again. Please take good care.